You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday afternoon, we're now inside of 2 weeks, barely over 10 days away from the official launch of the 2018-2019 Houston Rockets season. The Rockets announcing today that training camp will begin on Tuesday the 25th, media day on Monday the 24th. So we're very, very close to officially getting things underway. First week of practice will actually be out in Lake Charles at McNeese State University. More on that in a latter segment on today's show. What we're going to start with is a topic that has a lot of the league buzzing on Twitter today, which is the release of Sports Illustrated's top 100 NBA players list. And there are going to be others, ESPN, CBS, they usually do their own versions of this. But it's very important going into a season because it does give you, from the standpoint of roster composition, a nice 30,000-foot view of where these franchises are at going into the season. Now, yes, some teams will overachieve, others will underachieve. Factors like chemistry are very real. But in terms of who can actually win a title, what are fair expectations, these lists do have a fairly real purpose, to me at least, in that they do a good job of sorting and classifying groups of players, and more importantly, what teams have going into a season in terms of their overall talent base to draw upon. Now, as far as the Rockets are concerned, in this Sports Illustrated list, which you can find at si.com/NBA, the Rockets very well represented in the top 100. James Harden at number 4, Chris Paul at number 8, Clint Capella number 35, Eric Gordon at number 49, and PJ Tucker at number 85. Now, in our second segment, I'll go into my thoughts on each of their individual rankings, but to lead off, I want to put this in the team context because, to me, that's the biggest standout. The Rockets have two top 10 players in James Harden and Chris Paul. How many other NBA teams have two or more top 10? One, Golden State. They have three top 35 players in Harden, Paul, and Capella. How many other teams have three or more top 35 guys? Golden State and Boston. That's it. They have four top 50 players in Harden, Paul, Capella, and Gordon. How many other NBA teams have four-plus top 50 players? Again, Golden State and Boston. And as far as those two teams, Boston does not even have one top 10 player, let alone two, which is what the Rockets have. So when you look at this list, it's confirmation of the abundance of riches, how spoiled we are here in Houston following these Rockets, because it shows you the type of depth, especially in terms of top-tier talent, which is what wins games and especially wins titles in the modern NBA. It shows you just how dominant that roster is that Daryl Morey has put together. And a lot of it is a big leap forward for Clint Capella and Eric Gordon. Last year, Capella was 58. Now he's up to 35. Gordon a year ago was 83, now he's up to 49, and that ties into what we said really all season long last year, which is that those two are your variables. Now, yes, there were some questions about exactly how James Harden and Chris Paul would fit together, but by and large, most reasonable NBA observers agreed that those two were top 10 talents, and eventually they would work it out. It just happened to be sooner rather than later. As far as the Rockets actually challenging the Warriors, what would determine that, and the Rockets had them all but beaten, as Daryl Morey said earlier this week, one hamstring away, would be whether the Rockets could get that depth of top-tier talent for all-star type guys rather than two, and that's what Clint Capella and Eric Gordon evolved into this past season, and so it's good to see Sports Illustrated recognize that, and it's not like either of them should be going away. Clint just 25 and Eric Gordon just 29. Actually, excuse me, Capella is still just 24. He'll turn 25 next postseason. So if anything, Capella might still have more room to grow and improve his game. And Gordon at 29, certainly not at a point where you would expect any sort of fall off on the immediate horizon. So to me, these rankings reflect a lot of what we said all last season, which is the narrative on the Rockets as title contenders. It's not just about Harden and Chris Paul. In fact, it's less about them and more about the supporting cast in terms of getting more top-tier players to develop internally in Houston, and that's exactly what we saw with certainly Clint Capella and, to a smaller extent, Eric Gordon. And that's why it's so comical to me to see some of the overreactions this offseason in terms of some of the, over-under win totals for the Rockets, meaning in the mid-50s, these stories wondering if Utah or Oklahoma City might be the second-best team in the West instead of the Rockets. And y'all know my take on that. In my opinion, the gap between the Warriors and the Rockets, whatever that is, it's a lot closer than the gap between the Rockets and everyone else in the Western Conference. And I think it's silly to even think that one of those other teams is in the vicinity of the Rockets, at least at this point in time. Now, maybe things change, but I don't think that's a reasonable expectation going into the season. That's not to say that the Rockets' success is guaranteed. As I've said before, losing Trevor Ariza and Luke Baumuche, replacing them largely with James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony, although they did also bring in guys like Michael Carter-Williams, and of course the recent trade for Brandon Knight and Marquese Chriss. But look, that is a chemistry risk. You don't get to mid-60s in wins, 65 and 17, without chemistry being a big part of the package. The Rockets are replacing over 20% of the minutes from that team. So no, the Rockets are not a lock. Things can happen. Teams do overachieve or underachieve in a given year. So yes, there are questions. It's fair to wonder exactly how it's going to play out. That said, in terms of what your expectations should be, to expect the Rockets to be closer to Utah or Oklahoma City rather than Golden State is dramatically underestimating, in my opinion, the strength of that core. And I think it goes back, honestly, I've said this before, to the Rockets being underrated going into this past season and folks not appreciating not just the fit between Harden and Paul, but also how good players like Clint Capela and Eric Gordon were. Because when you look at the depth of talent, not just the top two, the two top 10 talents, but the top four in the top 50, three in the top 25, other teams besides Golden State just do not have that depth of top-tier talent. And the record last year showed it. Look, the Rockets had lots of injuries up and down the roster, but when Clint Capela, James Harden, and Chris Paul all played, their winning percentage in the regular season was over 900. That's ridiculous. Trevor Ariza missed 15 games. The Rockets were 14-1, and the one loss was a season finale in Sacramento when no one played, so they may as well have been 14-0. That's not to say that Ariza was not a valuable contributor. He was. He will need to be replaced. But the foundation of this team, in my opinion, is being treated as a lot more fragile than it actually is. Because with those big three, even the big four, if you want to throw in Eric Gordon, those four top 50, three top 35, two top 10 guys, that's the type of foundation that no one outside of Golden State can fall back on. And that's why I feel so secure in this Rockets team. It's not that they're without questions, but in terms of any dramatic fall-off, which is what going from, say, the mid-60s to the mid-50s, 10 or more games, which is what we're seeing suggested in some of these over-under projections, or these questions about whether Utah or Oklahoma City could take the 2 seed in the West, to me, you're not going to see, barring radical injuries or some sort of just chemistry failed experiment, you're not going to see that sort of fall off with this type of foundation. The Rockets weren't just a 65-win team because the chemistry was perfect last year. No, they were a 65-win team because the foundation, the top-tier talent, was that good. And those guys, the top 50, those four, they're still in place. And that's where, to me, these rankings have real value in terms of shaping the narrative. Because I really think a lot of, even going into this offseason, the skepticism of the Rockets was rooted in the fact that no one really expected their depth of top-tier talent entering last season to be as strong as it was. We still didn't see the growth, the development of guys, certainly Clint Capela, but even Eric Gordon as well, fully accounted for, to where when you had a couple of role players like Ariza and Baumuche swapped out for James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony in the offseason, you had so many folks that were attributing the Rockets really overachieving last year merely to chemistry that they were then expecting that switching of the role players to somehow have dramatic results. In reality, it wasn't just chemistry. Yes, it was positive for the Rockets a year ago, but also the talent really was that strong. And so that's why, to me, you should have a lot higher expectations for the Rockets, certainly than Utah and Oklahoma City. And it's why when you see these takes as far as the Rockets falling into the mid-50s or any sort of dramatic fall off from a year ago, as long as they have those big four and they're healthy, I'm rolling my eyes because this is a top-tier contender right alongside the Warriors. That's the only team that's even close to the Rockets in terms of the depth of top-tier talent in these rankings. So I commend Sports Illustrated on doing a fairly level, balanced job on these. Now, I wanted to lead off discussing the team impact because, to me, it's the classifications, the grouping, the top 35, top 50, top 10 talents, that's where you can learn the most. Because in terms of individual rankings, look, you can quibble over, you know, really anyone from, say, 3 versus 6, for example, or 8 versus 12. So in terms of the placement exactly of Harden, Paul, Capella, Gordon, whoever it may be, yeah, you can quibble a little bit, but look, it's more about the overall classification than it is any specific number. That said, I know some will focus on the exact digits, so I do want to acknowledge that. And I'll start with Harden at the number 4 spot, because I'm sure there's going to be a certain segment of the Houston community saying, look, this guy was the MVP of the league in a landslide. Why is he number 4? And I would respond to that by saying you have to consider the postseason impact. And I think these rankings are largely based on not just the regular season, which is what the MVP is voted on, but also who gives you the best chance to win a title. And that's not a slight against Harden, but it's more a credit to the guys who are 1 and 2, LeBron James of the Lakers and Kevin Durant of the Warriors, who are basically genetic freaks. And where that comes into play is LeBron and Durant, especially LeBron, they have a level in the postseason, especially defensively, that James Harden, a run-of-the-mill 6'5" shooting guard, by NBA standards, that is. Now, according to the regular human population, of course, he's large. By NBA standards, James Harden is not a genetic freak the same way that LeBron James and Kevin Durant are. They're not able to be defensive difference makers throughout the regular season. There is, to a certain degree, a lot of coasting to get their bodies through it, especially LeBron, now 34 years old. But when it gets to the postseason, those guys, again, LeBron 6'9", built like a tank. Kevin Durant, we all know he's 7 feet tall. There's just a level on both ends of the court that they can get to that James Harden, it's not that he's not trying, it's just at 6'5", he's not able to be the genetic freak defensively, the disruptor, the way those two are. So that's why, to me, until you see some fall off, and who knows, maybe it happens this season with LeBron James, I do give them LeBron and KD the benefit of the doubt as far as the top two, just because it's not just their skill set, it's their skill set combined with their genetics that when they really want to turn it up, which they can do in the playoffs, smaller sample size, more time off between games, et cetera, et cetera. To me, those are the league's top two difference makers of this generation, and so I'm fine giving them the top two until one of them shows any sort of significant fall off. Personally, I would put Harden at 3 and Curry at 4. Instead, as I went, Curry at 3, Harden at 4, but to me, it's very close. I would lean to Harden getting the benefit of the doubt on Curry because Harden has less of an injury concern. He's more durable. But to me, they're looking at the upside scenario. And in fairness, they also gave Chris Paul the benefit of the doubt, putting him as a top 10 guy in the league despite missing 24 games a year ago. So I can't rail against them for giving Curry the benefit of the doubt over Harden if they're also giving the benefit of the doubt on the injury front to Chris Paul. The reality is when both Harden and Curry are healthy, they're top-tier difference makers, incredibly good players, Hall of Famers, both elite as it gets, obviously very different skill sets, but Curry probably gets the benefit of the doubt based on the fact that he's won titles and Harden has not. Now, of course, that's not really Harden's fault because Curry has had just an abundance of riches around him in Golden State, but the fact is he does have the rings and it's close enough to where, again, you could put Harden at 3, Curry at 4, or Curry at 3, Harden at 4, and I'm not going to complain either way. I would quibble, I would put Harden at 3, but it's close enough that it's not a big deal. I will commend Sports Illustrated, by the way, for not putting Anthony Davis in that top 4. To me, it's pretty clear that in these types of rankings, LeBron and KD should be 1 and 2, and then Curry and Harden at 3 and 4 in some order. But those are clearly your top 4 most valuable NBA players. And yet, from time to time, you do see people, analysts, trying to put Anthony Davis in that top tier. And look, I get it. You don't have a big man in that top 4, and that's what Anthony Davis is. He's probably the most valuable big man in the modern NBA. He's fun to watch, plays in a small market, great kid. Look, I know what the numbers are. He's a freak show, but they have got to correlate to winning to put him over any of those top 4, LeBron, KD, Curry, and Harden. And while he's had some quality teams in New Orleans, look, top-tier NBA players are the type where you can put them almost anywhere, and their presence alone is going to guarantee you 50-plus wins and get you into contention. And with AD, I know what the numbers are. I like him. He's so fun to watch. But there's got to be a stronger correlation between his numbers and team success before you can put him in that top tier. So I do commend SI for putting Harden ahead of AD, even though I know there are some, such as the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, that consistently put AD in the top 2 or 3. And I just, quite frankly, do not get it. Now, moving on down the list as far as the Rockets are concerned, Chris Paul at number 8. I'm sure there are a lot of NBA fans who are going to say, wow, this guy's 33 years old. He averaged under 19 points per game, 8 assists last year. Why is this guy still top 10? He missed 24 games. And if you're looking at just the regular season, you might can say that. Although, again, remember, he was number 1 in the entire league in real plus-minus, I believe. So if you dig deeper, his impact in terms of analytics was tremendous in his on-court value to the Rockets a season ago. But where it really comes into play for Chris Paul, his value, is the playoffs. And I'm going to lead with the first sentence that SI wrote in their description of Chris Paul at number 8. The implicit framing of the top 100 is this. Who are the players who really matter in the games that matter most? Paul jumps near the top of the list, not because he happens to play for one of the best teams in the league, but because he's exactly the kind of player you want involved when your season is on the line. And then, of course, it points to his tremendous performances in the Warriors and Jazz series in the playoffs before he went down with the hamstring injury. I know Chris Paul's old, but this is why you still give him the max at 33 years old. This is why re-signing him was such a big deal. When the chips are down, when it really matters, and that's what this list is based upon, that's why LeBron and KD are 1 and 2, Chris Paul is that good. If anything, you might could say that he should be even higher than 8. For example, Russell Westbrook at 7 has not been as good the past 2 postseasons as Chris Paul has been. So if anything, you could make a case for Chris Paul being even more valuable when it really matters, but I think they're trying to give at least some value to the regular seasons in these rankings and durability considerations. I'll read a little bit more from the SI recap of Chris Paul. On the one hand, Paul's tendency to pick up injuries clearly works against him. On the other, Paul is still operating at such an incredible level that some missed time is tolerable. You make do when a player is operating this close to an MVP level, even if he misses 24 games along the way. And by the way, the 24 games he missed last season, a bit of an outlier, that's the most he missed of any season this entire decade in the NBA, so it's not a guarantee that's going to happen again. Really, in the regular season, he only had one issue of prolonged severity. That was that weird bone bruise in the postseason, which is not really a soft tissue injury that comes with age, just kind of a flukish circumstance. And the Rockets, because it was October, trying to buy as much time as they could to make sure that he's right. Really, while he's prone to a few nicks and bumps along the way, like most players in their early 30s are, he's not as injury prone as he was a year ago. But even if you want to not give him the benefit of the doubt and say, wow, he is going to be that injury prone moving forward, well, still, the 58 games that he played, and then especially in the playoffs, yeah, he was truly at a borderline MVP level. He was that good, especially when the moments were really, really big in the postseason. So that's why really the entire month of June, I saw so many folks around the league saying, wow, why doesn't Houston draw a harder line in the sand with Chris Paul, trying to get him below the max or only on a 2 or 3 year deal? What's his value really at 33 years old? No, his value still is that high if you actually watch and understand the game. If you look at just the topical statistics, games played, points and assist averages per game, maybe not, but it's 2018. We have the tools to go a lot deeper than that. We also have the entire playoff run, of course, and if you regularly pay attention to the Rockets or the NBA, you know how valuable Chris Paul is. Yes, at 33, he's still a top 10 player, and that's why the Rockets are so well positioned. Again, the only other team in the entire NBA with 2 top 10 guys, 2 top 8 guys, is the Warriors. Now, going on down the list, if you want a case for optimism, Clint Capella at 35, that might be underselling him. You could make an argument based on what he did in the postseason that he's a top 25 player when you factor in not just offensively what he can do in the pick and roll game, but defensively being able to guard players at any position. For example, Rudy Gobert at 14, Karl-Anthony Towns at 19. We saw Clint Capella largely outplay those guys, especially Karl-Anthony Towns, through 2 playoff series. Yes, Clint has a slightly better supporting cast, but even one-on-one in terms of their contributions around the bucket, Clint Capella more than held his own in terms of his defensive versatility. He's able to switch on guys, even smaller players, which in today's NBA has so much value in ways that certainly Towns, but even Gobert, can't quite do on the perimeter. My sense is that there's some caution with Capella's ranking because in the regular season, he still only averaged 27.5 minutes per game. He does still need to get better with the stamina. Now, I'm optimistic he can do it because he was over 30 minutes per game in the playoffs, but he needs to show it over the course of an 82-game season that his body is able to handle the rigors of those types of minutes. I think also there's some reluctance to move him too high when you consider he was 58 a year ago in these same rankings. How much does 1 year really mean? But look, those of us in Houston know Clint Capella very well. When you look at his improvement combined with his work ethic, you know it's no fluke. It's not just a product of the players around him. He really does work that hard, put in the time to be good, not just offensively, but defensively as well. And at 24 years old, when you consider the jump he made from his third season to his fourth, he might still be getting better. So if anything, when you look at Clint Capella at 35, that might be underselling him. You might could see a year from now Clint Capella being seen as a top 25 guy. Because even now that he's got his contract Clint Capela, to me, does that fit the mold at all of a player whose effort starts to wane now that they got their first big payday? From everything I've seen from Clint from the moment he arrived in Houston 4 years ago, his work ethic is 100% legitimate, and I expect that to continue. So Capela at 35, that's fair, and if he builds on his durability, he might actually be more valuable than that this season and beyond. And then Eric Gordon at 49, I don't know that that's necessarily reflective of Gordon a year ago being so much better than he was 2 years ago. So much of it is just an overall market correction to realize just how valuable a healthy Eric Gordon actually is, because there were so many injury-plagued years in New Orleans that I think there was a reluctance to give him his due. Also, I think Gordon probably got a little bit of extra credit for being able to close out games against the Warriors, hit big shots. He was able to hold his own defensively in that series. So in terms of EG's rating, I really think he's been a top 50 quality player all along. It's just been his value was artificially depressed for a few years based on the injury factors and other things going on behind the scenes in New Orleans. And now he's being able to flourish in a system in Houston that plays to his skill set. And even though it feels like he's been in the league for a while, especially with the injuries, folks, again, he's only 29. So I don't think you're going to see any sort of major fall off with Eric. I think that ranking is very legitimate. And again, four top 50 players for the Rockets, only other teams in the NBA that have that, the Warriors and the Celtics, and the Celtics don't even have one top 10 player, the Rockets have two, so that shows you just how strong this foundation is, which again, to me, is the main point of this. As far as other Rockets, PJ Tucker at 85, that seems fair, I think, in terms of his value to the Rockets system. They'd say that he's higher than that, but for a 33-year-old who's very limited offensively, I think it's reasonable. You're not going to see these rankings put him that much higher. I do think it's a little odd not to see Carmelo Anthony in the top 100, and if I had to bet, he'll be on that top 100 list this time a year from now, especially considering how the system in Houston and the players around him are going to play to his skill sets. But look, with the beating that Carmelo's taken in the press the last couple of years, it doesn't surprise me, and quite frankly, I don't hate it. Give Carmelo something to prove. And while I would put him in the top 100, not sure how high he would go, but he's enough of an offensive difference maker that I would gamble on him even at 34 years old. Look, when you consider how underwhelming that season was in Oklahoma City, when you factor in the decline we saw his last season in New York, I understand where they're coming from. Like I said, I would have him on there. My bet is by the end of the year, we all view him as certainly a top 100 player again. But when you consider the narratives and the things that have been working against him the past couple of years, I get where they're coming from not having him top 100. Now, he was number one on their snubs list, and they explained the factors that went into it. But at this point, Carmelo is just going to have to turn the narrative himself. And if anything, I kind of like the fact that he's being snubbed, because it gives him all the more incentive mentally to buy in and to make sure that it works this time in Houston the way it didn't a year ago in Oklahoma City. Now, to close out the program, spent the first couple of segments talking about the top 100 players list, which is a bit abstract. I do, before we close out, want to turn to actual news, which we have some of today. The Rockets are releasing this morning that Media Day is Monday the 24th, which is 11 days from today, and then the opening of training camp is Tuesday the 25th in Lake Charles, Louisiana, on the campus of McNeese State University. Now, it's the first time in a while the Rockets have not had their training camp at Houston. The reason for that, of course, owner Tillman Fertitta owns the Golden Nuggets, so the Rockets can have a fun week out there. He can put them in some great accommodations, and McNeese actually has a brand new state-of-the-art training complex, so it works out well. Rockets can kind of get away. A bit of a similar concept to when they went to the Bahamas, you know, not deal with the day-to-day in Houston, what they're used to. Not that, saying that families are negative, but when you're talking about buying in the first week of training camp, don't have any outside noise, friends, family, you get together in a place that's not your home, it's all basketball, it's all business, and so I think that's what kind of the goal is. And then Monday the 1st, the Rockets are back to Houston, and then Tuesday the 2nd of October is when the preseason actually starts, Rockets-Grizzlies in Birmingham, Alabama. Again, Media Day will be the 24th, although it actually won't be at Toyota Center. This year will be at the Post Oak Hotel. But the importance of Media Day, of course, we get to talk to Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, all the key people around the organization. But I would suspect this will be the first time that we actually hear from Carmelo Anthony in depth and get to ask him questions since he joined the Rockets. So for those wanting to hear from Carmelo himself in terms of is he open to a bench role, what is his mentality, Monday the 24th would be my bet on when we get to hear from him. Now, before we close out, one personal note. I will be back by Media Day. You will have me starting the 24th in our normal starting preseason mode and getting back to the daily show that you know us as, especially once the preseason starts. We have games in the regular season in October. Until then, barring any sort of breaking news, I'm actually going to be off the grid. Next week is the last week of the offseason, so my wife and I are going on vacation, so I'm going to be handing off this show to Chris Gordy. He's on Twitter, at Chris Gordy. If you don't already know him, he's the assistant program director at Sports Talk 790, which y'all should know is the Rockets' official flagship in Houston. He knows the team well, hosts a lot of their programming, so he's going to be bringing you two shows next week, previewing training camp, may have a guest or two lined up as well. So Chris is going to be taking this while I'm on vacation. Again, last week of the offseason, it feels like a good time to get away, to recharge, and then I'll be back once training camp starts on the 25th and media day on the 24th. Chris just taking over for a week in my absence, but that's how we're going to keep this show rolling. We're not going to not have the show. We are the most regular podcast covering the Rockets, and we need to keep that going. So Chris Gordy will be filling in for me over the next week or so. Now, I will jump in if there's some sort of major news, a major transaction, then yes, I'll weigh in, but I'm personally not expecting that from everything we've heard from Daryl Morey of late. I think this Rockets roster is largely set, and as far as when they make another move, do they get another 3 and D guy down the line, I think that's largely going to be determined by forces outside of the Rockets. When do other teams decide to act? Is it before the season? Is it December? Is it right up until the trade deadline in February? Is it buyout season? Whatever it is, be it the trade market for Brandon Knight or buyouts, because the Rockets save most of their mid-level exception, the Rockets are well-positioned to pounce. It's just a matter of when, and I think at this point, it's not going to be before training camp, barring some sort of radical last-minute change in direction. Now, a year ago, we did have a team do that, and that was the New York Knicks with Carmelo Anthony deciding to trade him right before training camp to the Thunder, but there were some extenuating circumstances there. We all knew that that situation was so toxic that the start of training camp was a bit of a deadline because it would have been such a circus to bring Carmelo to camp with the Knicks. Situations that I think the Rockets are monitoring, again, guys like Kent Bazemore, Courtney Lee, those types around the league, I really don't think any of them are nearly that toxic to where the start of training camp is some sort of major deadline. So I'm not anticipating any major move next week. If there is, yes, I will jump in, but I'm assuming it's going to be fairly quiet, just previewing training camp, looking ahead at the key storyline. So if that's the case, Chris Gordy is going to be hosting this show. If you're not already following him, do so at Chris Gordy, G-O-R-D-Y, on Twitter, and then he'll hand things back off to me the following weekend when we get ready for media day on Monday the 24th and training camp on the 25th. So with that, we will wrap up today's show. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. If you want more content before the next show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, just my name. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And again, if you haven't followed Chris Gordy already, please do. Chris, G-O-R-D-Y. He will be your host your next couple of episodes, in my opinion. So that's how you can get updates between shows. Beyond that, if you want more content, we have so many networks. Again, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. LockedOnRockets.com is our website. LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is our email address. All those ways that, again, you can access content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fans. Also, if you have not subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn. Odds are wherever your podcast listening home is, you can find this because we're part of a great network of shows across the Locked On Podcast Network covering the NBA, NFL, even some college sports and Major League Baseball. So if you have not subscribed to us already, I strongly encourage you to do that and also leave us a 5-star review at those places because that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and make the business model work here at Locked On Rockets, the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. That's also how you'll get episodes as soon as they're out. You only have to wait for me or Chris or anybody else to post them on Twitter. And if you haven't checked out our sister shows, Locked On Texans, we're also going to be starting up Locked On Aggies very soon, covering Texas A&M Athletics, the former Locked On Texans hosted by Robert Land and Brian Patterson, covering the Houston Texans. You should check out them as well because, folks, we're in Texas. Football season is in full swing, so there's a lot of activity going on those fronts as well. So I strongly encourage you to check out those shows in my absence as well. So with those plugs out of the way, I will sign off. Again, I won't be here next week in all likelihood, but I will be back by training camp. I'm not going anywhere. Just want to explain where I'll be. You should be in good hands with Chris Gordy for the next couple of shows. For now, though, this will do it for me. As always, thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, your most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball.